Hi, this is Dawn Shireen, and this is my podcast, Dancing with Bipolar. Today's special guest, Bill Protzman, is the founder of Music Cares. We'll talk about music, mental health, and how they can both enable each other to live a better life. And now, without further ado, let's bring on Bill.
Good morning.
Hey, Dawn, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Oh, pretty good. It's a rainy day here in San Diego, so I'm just being sort of gloomy with the weather, but in a good way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's perfect sense. It's the same here. It's rainy and possibility of snow here in Arizona today up in the mountains. So
crazy.
And it's windy and it's chilly and it's just like a day to make soup and like just, you know, tuck in with a good book or something.
Yeah.
Or some good soundtracks, you know, maybe.
Yeah, good music, whatever. What part of Arizona are you in?
I live up in the White Mountains, so I'm in Lakeside, Arizona.
About
an hour from Flagstaff, so.
Yep. Beautiful.
It is. It's very beautiful here. It reminds me, I'm from Connecticut, so it reminds me of New Hampshire. So I'm always like, asked when people are like, where do you live? Well, the White Mountains of New Hampshire, the White Mountains of Arizona. It's like, I might as well just have moved to New Hampshire, but now we relocated here to Arizona where I never thought I'd see snow again. And I was really wrong.
Yeah, well, thanks to, you know, the changes in the weather, but there it is.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, our altitude is like 7,600 feet above sea level, I think, where I'm at.
God.
So, yeah, we're definitely up there. But it's a good day for an interview, and tech is working on our side today. So
yes, it is.
Let's go with it. Okay, so I'm going to give you some – I'm going to like introduce you and then I'm going to let you like go on it. And then I have some esoteric questions towards the end of it that I told you that nobody probably ever asked you these questions.
Perfect.
Before.
I love it.
Okay. All right. So first of all, I want to get into the mission statement that you have for Music Cares. And it reads as, remind people of their built-in ability to use emotion for good and offer proven practical tools for our access to music as a behavioral, emotional, physical, and spiritual self-care modality.
Perfect.
Wow. That's a lot. Do you want to break that down just a little bit for the normal person who might not even know what the word modality actually means?
Yeah, I know. So I tend to get into the jargon every so often. But, you know, like a modality is something like yoga or meditation or tapping, where there's a practice that you can learn. And, you know, I like to say practice because it implies that you're never really going to master it. You can get really good at it, but a practice is like a lifelong commitment. In my case, like playing the piano, it's a lifelong practice. So you can get pretty good, which is why doctors still call it a practice.
Exactly.
But, you know, it implies there's always more to know and more to learn. And meditation is one of those amazing practices where you can get really, really good at it. And then when you start to go beyond just the basics, they tell me you can have these esoteric experiences that are so cool. I've experienced that with music. So Music Care is learning how to give yourself all kinds of health. And I'm saying that intentionally, give yourself health. Is that making any kind of sense? Using music as your modality.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. It does. It makes perfect sense. Because I used, coming out of my nervous breakdowns each time, it was music that actually pulled me back out from where I was into my new landing area. So
Yeah.
I totally get it.
I relate to that too. It's really kind of cool to find that, you know, we all do these journeys together, you know.
We do. We're all on the same path. We're just on different maps. So that's where it gets confusing because we all have a different map that we're following to get to the same destination.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Well said. I like that. So the other part of that, the modality itself being music, but music affects us in so many ways. So obviously it can have an emotional effect because we like to listen to music that makes us feel a certain way. Or if you're using music to work out in a functional way, that's a physical effect that you can gain from music. Mental, there's lots of ways that music balances us mentally when we have to do intellectual heavy lifting, stuff like that. Music can really help. It's great for memory. And then the wonderful thing that I love about music is that if it doesn't fit any of those three categories, there's also something going on. So I've lumped that all together in the spiritual category. And if you have ever like sung in worship at church, or if you've been to a concert where magic happens, that's what I mean by spirituality. It's got that wonderful invitation to something more. you know, than the day-to-day, the humdrum. And that's something moreness is the spiritual aspect of music for me.
When I've experienced that, it's like it's opened up the oneness of that situation where like everybody was in that one exact moment in the same headspace and everybody just experienced it all the same. And I'm a musician too. I started playing tuba when I was like really young.
Seriously? Oh, this is cool.
And I was like Juilliard bound on a tuba scholarship, and that we had issues in my family and that didn't happen. But I mean, I started playing piano at 2, not necessarily a child protege because, you know, it wasn't like forced on me as a kid, but I gravitated towards the piano,
yeah.
You know, and then by, you know, 4th grade, I'm marching with the tuba in the high school band and doing Tuba Christmas in Rockefeller Center and, you know, all that. So, I played Woolsey Hall one year at Yale. I don't know if you've ever played that facility, but there's magic in that building. The way the acoustics are in there, it was just like, it's like, I'm sure you've experienced it. You're playing and all of a sudden you realize that tears are just streaming down your face and you don't know why, but it's like the tonal effect of what it is that you're doing is hitting your vibration in your body and affecting you in such a way that the only way that you can actually, you know, speak about it is to cry.
Felt that, but fortunately not when I'm on stage. I have that experience like after leaving the stage where I just fall apart.
Do you? Does it really affect you that like physically and mentally? Because I tried to find some of your performance stuff and I guess I just didn't look hard enough, because I'm sure it's out there, but I didn't want it to sway the interview either, because you know, I have a couple angles I want to go on, so I don't want to like just classify you as like the classical piano guy, because I think you're far more than that. You know,
well, we can talk about this in terms that are like related to music, but since we both noticed this, our job as musicians is big emotion. That's really what we do. And I think what you're feeling when you felt that incredible emotional overwhelming response to the music itself was your familiarity with big emotion. It's almost a gift to be able to have access to those feelings in a way that is far beyond the normal bear. You know, the normal average bear doesn't feel that big, but our job as musicians, so we do, and we practice going deep. And every so often, it comes back to us in a way that's just beautifully overwhelming.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, I can get that sometimes with birds. I mean, because, you know, I have bipolar, so I mean, I'm going to say it adds into that ability for me to be able to from, I'm not going to say reality, but from this plane of reality and go into a different plane of it. And I can literally sometimes be walking and the bird sounds alone will just take my breath away. And it's like, it's like, what are they saying? What are they singing to us? What are they, you know, I mean, they're communicating something to us. They're, you know, and it's just amazing. So
this is so beautiful. I'm the gifts of bipolarity I'll talk about this in a bit, but I blew the charts on both sides. So there are certain gifts associated with being outside the norm, whatever the hell that might be, who knows.
Right.
But they're beautiful and they're terrifying, and it's just all part of what it is, you know, to be us.
Right. Well, I mean, because people, I mean, we're more than two. In my opinion, everybody's bipolar because we all have that good and bad, that evil, you know.
Oh, yeah. Genius. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Thing. But we're more than that, because, I mean, if it's body, soul, spirit, then that would make us three anyway. So it's like this whole just bipolar thing is crazy. I think people are quadridimensional, and it just depends on if you're allowed to find your talents or not, that you become more fulfilled in what you're supposed to do with your life. You know, and not everybody has that epiphany moment or that catastrophic moment in their life where they're brought to their knees and it's like, what am I supposed to be here for? And then at that moment, your epiphany hits and it's like, oh, really? I had to go through all this to get to here, you know? And I've had my moment on that. That's why I'm doing the podcast and my other things with the mental health realm. But
I applaud you for that. It's so important that people hear about those moments.
Yeah. And I'm honest. I don't know if you listen to my podcast or not.
Oh yeah.
I don't do it for the, I'm not doing it for kudos. I mean, if there's cookies involved in it, yes, I want to win the cookie prize. But other than that, I just want to help people. And by being as honest as possible and like that's the only way people are going to actually understand what it's fully about and how it doesn't last forever and how, you know, it's just a mood thing that comes and goes when you're taking your meds. When you're not taking your meds, that's a different situation. But yeah, I just want to help people. That's my bottom line.
Well, there are cookies on that. And awesome. I'm with you. I think it's, you know, trauma survivors. So I've had trauma things, suicide. There's things we need to talk about, not to normalize them, but to allow people, you know, to look at them and report from the front lines, you know, so to speak.
But maybe, I mean, okay, so let's just hit the suicide because was something that came up in one of your interviews or something about that. And I didn't really get into the, you know, the whole thing about if you actually did commit suicide, if you had suicidal ideations, if it was a fleeting circumstantial situational moment, or if this has been like a long-term, you know, chronic situation in your life.
Yes to all. So we talked about how our job as musicians is big emotion. And in my particular case, I had the chance to take one of those therapy, your therapist mentors you through a process and you pay for a psychological exam that's scored somewhere else. And it's all very, you know, scientific and all that. So I took this exam because I was curious and I don't know, it cost a couple $100 or something. So no problem. I did it. And then the results came back and my therapist called me in, of course, to review. And she said, Bill, I have to ask you some questions because the company that scored the exam doesn't think that the answers that you gave are consistent. Huh. Like there was something that wasn't fitting the mold, right?
Right.
And so she asked me 5 or 6 of the questions again, and I answered them exactly the same way because, you know, seemed like that was obvious to me, you know? So, and she said, okay, so they warned me about this. And my therapist said, basically, Bill, you're off the charts at both sides. You're off the charts on the depression end. So if you're looking at it as a line, that's one point on the line. It's far off on one side. And she said, Bill, you're also off the chart on the schizo end. And basically what had happened is it doesn't mean, I have been chronically depressed and I still deal with depression often. I don't know anything about schizophrenia. I have a buddy who has schizophrenia tendencies, or maybe he is, but I had blown the model. There wasn't a model that I fit. and that kind of makes sense to me. You know, putting me in a box is pretty tough. But it makes sense. It did show this giant range, which I already knew too, because as a musician, I've got to be able to find the big emotion, whatever part of the chart that's from. So in my own case, I have felt this chronic depression thing. I really resonate for big, heavy classical music from the Romantic period, Rachmaninoff and Chopin and Brahms and Mahler and all of that. From the modern period, ballads really do it for me. And that's been typical of my life for a long time, living with those heavy, sad feelings. And I don't know if I'm clinically depressed. I've had an opportunity to use psych meds and it didn't work. So I don't know where the clinical thing is, but I've come to feel that those big emotions are a part of our capacity as human beings, and that to run away from them isn't great. So at a moment in my life where I felt like I was done, everything was finished. It was Labor Day weekend of 2007. I was once again confronted with those feelings that are, you know, maybe it's time to end it all. I really can't think of another reason I need to be here any longer. You know, everything's done. And I wasn't particularly depressed, you know, Dawn. I was just sort of feeling
over it.
Over, done, yeah. And I could have called my therapist, could have my friends. It wasn't about having people that I, you know, and I wasn't in crisis. So to speak. I mean, goodness knows, we've all had friends that have taken their own lives, and we know about what it's like to lose someone who's close to us for whatever reason. But I just felt like, you know, okay, this is pretty much where I am right now. Let's go with it. And instead of finding a rope or reaching for a gun, I sat down in a comfortable chair with some headphones, and I put a piece of music on Spotify or whatever it was, and just let it play over and over. And this was before Spotify. It must have been iTunes, 2007. It's probably iTunes.
Yeah, probably iTunes.
So I just let it play. And I had that experience that you were talking about playing at Yale, where the surprising depth of emotion that was inside of me just welled up and I began to weep. And I must have sat there listening to this music on repeat over and over for hours, just weeping and weeping. And finding a depth of emotion that I didn't know I had. I really didn't know I'd had that ability. And I've had those experiences before. And sometimes they trend more towards making a plan and actually, you know, wanting to go out and taking my own life. But most of the time they come up and I go, oh, okay. So I choose to keep breathing.
Right.
That night I wasn't making any choices. I was just going with it. And it lasted a long time. And at one point I'd started this process at sunset. And at one point, surprisingly, I woke up. I'd fallen asleep and the music was still playing. And you know what? At that moment, I really felt awake in a way that I'd never felt before.
Yep.
It felt like something had changed. It was that epiphany, that moment, whatever. Yep. But I was too wrung out to do anything about it. So I went to sleep. I went to, you know, just crawled into bed. But the next day, oh my gosh. So I woke up, and of course, there are all these voices in my head when I wake up. My internal dialogue sometimes starts before I do.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And that morning, the voices were, they were in the form of a poem, of lyrics. It was organized words, and things rhymed and stuff, and that's unusual for me. I'm not a, you know, I write some poetry, but it doesn't come like dictation. And that morning, it was dictation, and I wrote it down. Four verses and a bridge, and I realized it was lyrics that I was getting. And then the next thing that happened was music, and I started writing the music down. And it's the one and only time in my experience as a human being that I've had that kind of flow. And it was all done, and it's this stupid little blues shuffle. Actually, it's not much of a song. And I said to the universe out loud, I said, "So who's, you know, here I am. I've got this song. This is amazing. Who's going to perform this?" I'm thinking maybe I can find somebody who will be brave enough to, you know, take my song on stage or whatever. But the words came back just clearly as I was talking to you now, I heard it. Bill, you are. I'm like, okay, right. And I had a one-man show and I was doing stuff. I don't sing. You know, that isn't me. But I performed the dang thing and a couple of times, and it solved the problem that I had of turning a corner in the show. I needed a musical corner to shift the emotion. And this song did it. And so I played it. In the show, right after the song that I sort of jovially call my suicide song, the Rachmaninoff piece that I'd been listening to that Friday evening, back to back. So
what the music was, Rachmaninoff. Okay, that
makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's, you know what? I can find it as we're talking here and tell you exactly what the opus number and all that is. But it's a etude tableau for piano course, and it had been with me for a long, long time. It was in my senior recital, and I think I first heard it in the 80s, you know, like on NPR or something. But that piece of music has opened me up in a way that very few other pieces of music have had that effect on me. And it's there for me all the time, and I still play it regularly. I play it at least once a day. I just go to the piano and play it. Okay, for those of you taking notes, the sort of colloquial name for this is Seagulls, but it's Rachmaninoff. Come on, Bill. Etude Tableau, Opus 39, number 2. There you go. There's all the classical wonky stuff for it. Opus 39, number 2, if you want to listen to it. The recording that I heard is one that I love so much when I first heard it. It was recorded by Vladimir Ashkenazy back in the day. You can probably find that on Spotify, and there's a link to it on my link tree. If anybody's interested, I can send that to you. Go through and listen to old Vladdy playing it himself. And but amazing how the willingness, like I was willing that night to be with those emotions, whatever they would be, right?
Right.
That willingness opened this up for me, and at practice of doing that, it still does. So I can easily now deal with the suicidal ideation that's there, I think, for many of us who are aware of it. It's probably there for everybody if they acknowledge it. But
exactly.
It's a good thing, you know, to say, hey, you know, I choose to keep breathing. This is life's
exactly.
All right.
Right. Everybody looks at that so negative, like, well, suicide, then you're, you know, depressed and you're going to this and that. And it's kind of like, no, it's an option. It's over there in the corner. I'm bringing it up because it's an option, but I'm choosing this option right now to live and not make death my lifestyle, which is a horrible lifestyle. I mean, I try to tell kids that all the time that are suicidal, and it's like, success is final, and you know, it's not a lifestyle. You don't get to choose after you make that one choice if you're not lucky enough to come back.
Yeah.
Because I was lucky enough. I did actually, back east, I overdosed on trazodone, and I actually did kill myself. I took 160 trazodone. It was well planned out. I wanted to die. And when I came out of that, I was changed. Like you said, you came out of your meditation, or whatever you want to call it, your vision quest.
Yeah.
And you felt awoke. And that's like when I came out of my, man, it took a long time, but when I came out of it and I was like, oh my God, what a selfish, in my own opinion, I'm not judging anybody else who has, you know, I'm not placing any judgment on anybody else. In my opinion, when I came out of it, I was like, that was the most selfish thing I ever could have done in my life. However, it opened my eyes up to what needed to be done in order to stop the suicide pandemic that's happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, and if I hadn't seen both sides, and I came back changed, I came back absolutely changed. Everything looked different to me. I had gratitude for rocks, you know, where before.
Right.
Like,
right.
I was grateful for anything. Colors were different. Music was so much more vibrant. Like it had a different, like I had ascended in a way that it had a different level of communication to me when I hear music or, you know, animals or, you know, stuff like that. It utterly changed my life. And I mean, and it wasn't like I could get it on the first shot. You know, I had two other suicide attempts after that, which weren't as serious, but mm-hmm. It was like, you know, I just had to make sure that I was really on the right mission, that this is really what I'm supposed to be doing, like helping people save their lives and understand that.
It's so good to talk to you about this, because, you know, talking to therapists and whatever on podcasts, they appreciate it. They understand it, but it's a little more bit different because they haven't had the experience
they did book talk. I mean, I guess there's probably therapists out, well, they probably can't admit it because then they wouldn't be HIPAA qualified or whatever. But I think unless you've hit that bridge, you know, you've been in that abyss, you've been at that moment of that yes, no moment where, you know, it's like that 1 second moment where you make up your mind. I mean, and if you haven't lived that, there's no way that you can absolutely understand it, because it's impossible to explain to somebody all the thoughts that go into that 1 second process of, am I going to finalize this, or am I going to keep on fighting, you know? And
so part of my mission, you're going to love this. Part of my mission is to encourage people to go that deep.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I mean, we have to, at some point or another, all of us need to face that. And I suppose the Christians call it being born again. Maybe that's a good analogy,
maybe.
But I think it happens more frequently than just once. I think it's a life journey. You should do the shadow work often. And like, you know, Luke Skywalker finding Darth Vader's hologram there, you know, and Yoda says, no, you have to go in there by yourself. That shadow work is so important. And we've ignored that. I think as a society, we've kind of tried to wallpaper over that and pretend it isn't there.
Well, they don't, I mean, I have ideas about that too, but it's like people that are emotionally raw are dangerous because they try to affect change one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. We do, don't we?
Yeah, totally do. Because it's like, what else are we supposed to do with all that we have, if it's not to make some kind of change or influence something in some way, you know? Now that can go both good and bad, of course, but
sure. And that is the challenge, because we know what happens if you don't pay attention. You get social media today. If you do pay attention, you get the cold shoulder from society that doesn't want to admit that these big problems actually exist. It's kind of like the psychological version of global warming.
Exactly. If we ignore it long enough and we don't put the pictures of the panda bears and all this up on, then people will just keep on watching Dancing with the Stars and status quo maintained and everybody's happy. But that's so not true.
It's such a myth. Happiness is just one option, you know, and the others are, if you take judgment off of them, the others are fine too. You got to have them.
You have to have them. Otherwise it's not a complete balance. And then, I mean, yeah, I mean, I took the Science of Happiness class out of Berkeley, which was an amazing class. I highly recommend it to anybody. The physiology of happiness and how you need to have grief and awe and gratitude and all the other, you know, being miserable here and there and not everything going your way to balance, because otherwise you're way too high in one end or way too low in another. If you don't have that balance,
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Your teeter totter is coming off the, you're flying.
It sounds so cliche, you know, to say that you can't really appreciate one until you've experienced the other. But it's true. I mean, we live in a binary universe in many ways, light, dark, all of that. But then there's this stuff, this emotional stuff, which is non-binary. And you can cry tears of joy, right? Exactly. It gets that complicated. And even more so. I mean, there's so
tears
many.
Of joy, tears of anger, tears of sadness, tears of humiliation.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's all there.
Okay,
and it's so rich. Okay, so yeah. Have we gone through that rabbit hole far enough?
I think we're kind of going down rabbit hole. So
I do too.
We're going to come back up one rabbit hole and down into another rabbit hole. So I think it's interesting that you're like, your suicide ode is Rachmaninoff.
Yeah.
Now, back in the day, I think we're similar ages. The PMRC tried to get a whole lot of music taken off the market, saying that it was causing teenagers to commit suicide.
Oh, right.
Basically heavy metal.
Yep.
Now, Rachmaninoff, in my opinion, could be considered one of the heavy metal masters of his time. But I mean, do you really think that a song, I mean, you already have the mindset going and everything like that, but a song could trigger somebody to actually like kill themselves?
Well, there's evidence that it has. Whether or not that means that it's the same for everyone, I think there needs to be a more balanced look at that. If you're someone who is really into Rachmaninoff, for example, I know that his music is safe, but I know that because I've taken the time to dive into it deeply and find out what's really there. I can also say that about music like Metallica or some of the other stuff that people worry about as triggering music. But let's ask it a bigger question on this same subject. So there's a lot of violence and anger in rap music.
Some of it.
Not all of it. And some of it. And fortunately, rap has sort of expanded now. You've got rap ballads, you've got rap love songs. Like hip hop culture is just embraced.
Country rap now, which is country. Amazing. Hip hop, dude. It is the shit.
Isn't that crazy? Here's this culture. So the point is that when rap got started, so there was the same concern about it, right? Oh, you know, you can't say that. It's going to make people violent. Exactly. And that's true. Some people may be triggered by that. But here's the opportunity that hip hop culture has given us. It's given us an opportunity to feel things that we need to feel with honesty and authenticity. You know, at the same time as his hip hop is coming alive, we've got codependent love songs and ballads about, you know, how screwed up it is to be in love and unrequited love and all of that. I mean, it's like, yeah, okay, that's fine. Sing about that stuff. But who's singing about the anger? Who's singing about the fear? Where can you go to experience that? And folks like Billie Eilish are doing that now for teenage girls. And it's like, that is one of the huge lessons of angry music, let's say, that you can hear it without having to do anything about it. That the point of it is the feeling. Just feel it.
You live vicariously through the song without actually committing to action.
You got it. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Because I totally agree with that. And because there was a time when I was in recovery where I couldn't listen to music at all. It was the hugest trigger for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this comes into another question of music as time travel.
Oh, now, I love this.
Because literally, right, you can hear a song and it will take you back to an exact date, moment, space, time, and you're there.
Yeah. Your body doesn't know the difference, right? Physiologically, it's the same.
And it's like the whole same vibrational tone as the first time you heard it. And I think of it as time travel. I can put music on and I can instantly go back to, you know, high school days, you know, whatever.
Yep.
A lot of people think I'm crazy when I say that to them, but I'm like, that is the one verifiable form of time travel that we do have in our lifetimes is music. It's the only, as far as I can consider, it's the only thing that can take you back to where you got the scent, the atmosphere, the, you know, everything about that moment in time is boom. You're back at it.
It's all there. And I've done a lot of work with the nostalgia and memories, like releasing memories from music so that you can reclaim the music in a good way that, you know, was hurtful in the past. And I love this idea the way that you've said it makes so much sense to me, because oftentimes we tend to think that here we are in the present moment and all those memories are still part of our present moment, right, when in fact they are just memories. And if you're, for example, a veteran who's trying to release from post-traumatic stress and the memories that are connected to some traumatic event in the past, or if you're a normal person like me who's just trying to release trauma from my life, because we all have it, those are really, really important moments and tools, and they're very useful. So being able to wander back in time with music as your guide to find out what the energy of a moment was and release the negative stuff, but reclaim the positive, the fuel that's in those memories, that's a huge benefit of time travel. Let right? me just say it that way, right?
And you're not affecting the whole grandpa, like, you know, scenario.
No. No, you know? Not at all.
Were you affecting everything? Yeah, I'm down with time travel anyway. I'm trying to get somebody to build me a time machine.
Oh, I love it. Let's go into the future. Yeah. Have you thought about music into the future?
I have, actually, because all right. So I didn't. The whole Juilliard thing fell apart because my dad died and money got all messed up.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was 15, you know, so it was like 100 years ago. But I could go into the what ifs, but I don't do that. But what it did lead me to do was go into the Air Force instead. And in the Air Force, I became a cryptolinguist, okay?
Yeah.
Because on my ASVAB, they scored 127th percentile on language.
Wow.
I basically created my own language is what happened.
Wow.
So I have thought about it, because during my time working for Space Command, I was breaking code from satellite to determine if what we were hearing, you know, in the atmosphere was just atmospheric noise, gases, life, planets screaming, new planets being born, or communication. So, the future music has been key in my head. And that actually comes into one of the other questions I have here, that comes into synthesized music versus pure music made with like wood, metal, and stuff like that, and how right. that affects, because it's different. If you're listening to a plastic flute, or, you know, a silver flute, it's going to be different. And I'm wondering if there's a physiological effect to, like, you know, the synthesized electronica crap music. I hate to say it that way, because I know that they're musicians.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they have the same formula. They do this, you know, what I the whole thing. And as opposed to, like, real raw, you know, pick up a banjo and just start, you know, well, I can't really wail on a banjo, I guess, but you know what I mean.
You totally can. Like Bella Fleck totally wails on the banjo.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a tonal difference on how that affects the universe, right? I mean, because.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's hit this rabbit hole. Let's do it. The world is vibration. The earth is vibration. We're all tonally somehow tied in together.
Yes.
4G, 5G, EPVs, you know, smart electric radiation disruptors, all this stuff is affecting the tonality of our world right now.
Yes. Yes. Can't help it.
Can't help it. It's a side effect of growth. I guess.
Yeah. I mean, we are the largest radio emitter in our little corner of the galaxy right now.
And we're like the smallest, one of the smallest, you know, pieces of rock out there.
Yeah, exactly.
And, right. So how do we fix? So this is my big question. All right. Here's my theory. Okay. Seven continents, seven chords. We tonally get each continent to what it is supposed to be in our scale. And if we can repair it, if we can repair each continent and then tonally have our chord structure right, do you think we could repair the world?
Yeah, yeah. So I get that. I understand what you're saying here. This is really cool. Let's address the authenticity thing, because that's a big question people have right now. I think we've gone about as far away from authenticity as we're going to get for our current cycle as a civilization, you know.
So.
Even the people are reversing out of social media and taking cell phones away from their kids and, you know, sort of pushing back against the inauthentic. But the authentic stuff is the stuff that vibrates. And the most authentic stuff is not necessarily a kick drum that's been recorded and amplified up to a decibel level to shake your internal organs. Even though that can be very pleasant, if you're wearing your protection, please wear your protection if you're going to those concerts. But
yeah, definitely.
You know, we've gotten to a place where we've fallen out of our sweet spot so far that it takes that kind of kick drum to give us any sense of feeling. We're not that kind of individual. We're very sensitive, finely tuned organisms, and it doesn't take that kind of a stimulus to give us a response. However, by deadening our responders, we've gotten to a place where we need that much stimulus in order to give us the fix. And,
right.
You know, drug users know this. It's going to take more and more of the same drug to give you the dopamine that you know, you're killing your receptors with the same drug that you need more of in order to give you something like what the first, you know, it's not a great thing.
Yeah, chasing the dragon the whole way around.
Totally. It's just not work. And it turns out that a lot of medication is that way, including, drugs that make us feel good. So, how do we get back to authentic? Well, the shift has begun. I think the pendulum's swinging the other way. We're starting to see the results of, you know, how our civilization has gotten into trouble with bigger, better, faster, and greed and all that other stuff and income disparity and you name it. So how do we get back to the real? The real is me at the piano with a percussion instrument, touching a piece of plastic, used to be ivory, to hit a string that makes a vibration that will touch your eardrum. And if I do that well, then it's very pleasing. But if I have to hit the piano so hard just to get through all the other noise to reach you with something like what I meant to touch you with in the first place, that's not so good. We've lost the subtlety there and the nuance and the authenticity, because at that point it's just about making a louder noise than everybody else. And that doesn't work. I mean, that's where we are right now in society. The whole of the internet is about making as much noise as you can so that you'll be noticed, whether that's, you know, narcissistic selfie addiction or internet marketing, trying to get your product or your idea out there. It's all about noise, and we can't survive on that. That's not going to sustain us, as we're finding, because people are putting down their flat screens. So how do you get back to the authenticity? You know, what is it like when you pick up a tuba? For God's sake, a tuba. People, a tuba is big.
It's huge. Yeah.
It's huge. And when you make a sound on that tuba, the whole flipping instrument's going to vibrate. And if you're holding it, you're going to vibrate with it.
Yep.
Like, where do we get that kind of experience again? That's real. You know? Oh, yeah. You can hold on to a subwoofer and you can get the experience. But we're talking about something that is much more subtle. Human beings are not laid out for those big sounds. We're laid out for the subtle ones. And our sweet spot, like our dopamine sweet spot, is very narrow. And it doesn't take much to activate that, provided that you haven't deadened it.
Well, right. Or abused it to a point
So
are all people tonally the same? Are we all on the same vibrational level? I don't think that we are, but I'm not sure if that's like a chemical imbalance that we're all supposed to be like F sharp.
I see what you're saying. I don't think so. And I'm glad, because we need this diversity that we have. People often ask me, what's the best music for X? And I'll have to say, well, you know, it's the music you love is the music that's most powerful for you. And I hope that that's different for all 8 billion of us, however many there are now. But certainly knowing ourselves at a level that's able to say, yeah, you know, my preferred key is, actually, this is true. My preferred key is A flat. For a long time, I was playing a lot of stuff. I was just drawn to A flat. And it turns out that if you chase that rabbit hole a little further, that the people who are about A is 440 hertz and A is 432.
Okay, there we go.
So I've just been trending a little bit flat because, you know, that's where my sweet spot is. I don't know if that's just me or everybody, but.
No, it's because I'm F sharp diminished. That's like my oh my God, that's like the chords that slay me when I hear that. And it's not,
yeah,
I'm done.
Yeah. And you know, that kind of awareness. So why can't people who are not musicians have that awareness too? Right.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they might not be able to figure out the chord structure and like how to do the music theory on it, but yeah, I mean, to be that aware of what it is that's going to help you, like I'm feeling like really, you know, B flat minor today. I think I'm going to go listen to some, I don't know, old Zeppelin and like fix myself.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't that be amazing if it could be like, here's your prescription of Motley Crue, you know,
Well, I mean, we're laughing about it, but that's kind of my job. You know, I help people identify their own music so they can self-prescribe for what they need. It's like, obviously
exactly you do. You're the doctor of your doctor of music.
Yeah, that's what I do. So, I mean, you and me, we get this because we've been living music for so long. But the average bear is like, yeah, you know, music's playing in the background. I got my workout playlist, got my relaxed playlist. You know, it's like they haven't gone below the surface to really get what's happening there. And once you start to do that, well, it's safe, effective, and it's got thousands of years of evidence behind it. There's so much richness. Okay, that was rude.
I was actually, I'm really glad that we made it that far. We're not even going to talk about what happened. The audience has no clue what we're talking about. So anyway, we're talking about the richness. And this comes back. I have so many questions seeing that, you know, this was like, oh my God, this is going to be my go-to interview because you're just like, you're somebody that can bounce all my ideas off of that. Actually,
right. Yes. We actually understand as performing musicians, right?
I get it. So, but my question is, so my friend wanted me to ask you because when he gets into his funk or whatever, he puts on some of the most, people call it noise, you know, just it's loud, it's brash. There's no chord structure to it whatsoever. There's barely any rhythm to it, but it gets him out of it. Now
that's beautiful. Almost, yeah.
Yeah. Now for me, that makes me want to go and like do kickboxing, right? Mm-hmm. It's not for me. However, so you have your raucous music and then you have your classical and then you have silence.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Silence, form of music, it's its own vibrational tone in silence. And I often find myself in silence lately. Like, I mean, maybe I'm just overwhelming my head with a lot of stuff that I'm doing right now, but like, I will find myself and be like, wow, I haven't had anything on for like 3-4 hours and I've just been here just like chilling, you know? And there's something to necessary silence in our lives where people are just so busy filling themselves with noise, you know?
And sometimes it's not even, you know, noise that we intentionally play. I know when I go to the mountains, I live in the city. So when I go to the mountains, I feel so relaxed. And I've realized that part of that is because I'm not filtering all the background noise. Takes a lot of bandwidth just to filter out the freeway and the sirens and the whatever else is going on, you know, and in nature, you don't have to spend all that energy that you're not conscious of spending, but it's happening. You don't have to spend that energy just blocking out stuff that you don't want to hear.
Well, sometimes in nature, you do want to block out stuff because living on the mountain, I can tell you the coyote howls are creepy. And, I could definitely block those out, but go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one of the things I'm practicing on, I haven't got there yet, is learning how to listen around the tinnitus, the ringing in my ears.
Ooh.
And that's an interesting practice. There's guidance and you can go online and learn this stuff. I'm no expert, but I find that it's interesting that you can choose to not hear things and develop a practice around that. And I wonder sometimes if that's why my grandfather like could never hear my grandmother, but he could always hear me.
Yeah. Well, you know what they call, there's a specific term for that. Like,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't think of it right now, but yeah, I want to hear this, but I don't want to hear that. Yeah.
So I love your friend uses crazy noise to, you know, to come down. The buddy I mentioned who's got schizophrenic tendencies, mm-hmm. he listens to binaural beats.
And, I do too.
Yeah. But get this. So to get him to normal, like where he can talk to the rest of us, he has to stack up 5, 6, 7 binaural beats at a time to get him to a place where he can be like normal.
Yep.
And it's crazy, but it works.
I respect that. I actually, I started listening to noise disruptors because there's some kind of a vibrational or magnetic pull where I live. I don't know what is underneath this mountain, what the mineral composite is of it, but it is magnetic and it drives me absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And I put on these disruptors and it affects my dog too, which I know people are going to be like, oh my God, here she goes again with the crazy dog story. But it's true. My dog has tails and I can tell when, like, I haven't like given us some preventive maintenance on this tonal thing going on here. where he's like going crazy scratching. He's losing his vitality. He's not like, it's like we're having a neurological breakdown.
Yeah.
And I'll put on these disruptors or the binary beats. And it's like within 15 minutes, like I literally can feel my shoulders loosening back up. My headache is leaving. My dog is like sleeping. And I mean, there's definitely something to that. And I mean, now with like all the EMP stuff too, like all this, all the electronic,
yeah.
I mean, it's all bad.
Yeah. And we're not great receptors for all that, you know, 5G or and up sort of things.
5G thing is starting to scare me. I've just started looking into it because where I live, we're barely 2G. So, I mean, we're so far behind that it's probably actually one of the safest places on earth to be. But I mean, just like the cell towers and just like even the smart, like smart houses and the smart appliances and all like the Wi-Fi that's going through your house to tell you that you need to get milk. That is just, isn't that just like messing with people's brain waves and their physiological DNA in a way? Is it like rewiring people?
Probably, but we do have epigenetics, you know? So what we're becoming aware of, I think, is a moment in our era that people look back on it and say, oh yeah, that was the turning point where people decided that we needed to be better at defense, honestly. You know, that we can have a weekend away from technology, and it's a good thing. That kids can grow up without an iPad in their lap and actually become social beings, that we can choose to not have an Internet of Things surrounding us in our house. You know, these are potentially very wise choices that are physiologically perhaps essential for us to recognize and choose and actually give ourselves a break.
Right.
You know,
because we're like, we're always amped. I mean, if that's kind of what it seems like, we're always, we're always receiving electrical charges no matter where we are, because they're just firing at us all over the place. I mean, not where I live so much, because like, you know, like the closest free Wi-Fi is about 5 mile walk away from here. So,
yeah,
you know, and I'm grateful for where I live, although sometimes I would love to go to Boston again and just like, you know, be in the hubbub. But I mean, I might actually be the most centered I've ever been in my life at this point. You know, I found my mission. I've started to think I want to become really mediocre at it because I don't want to die yet. And my theory is that as soon as you find your mission and you start excelling at it, that's when you die.
I'm sorry to laugh. That's actually a fairly good observation if you think about it.
Oh crap, I have to stop being number one for a little while here. Let me just like get status quo and be like, you know, a little average for a minute, because I want to stick around for a while here. But
yeah, enjoy some of this, you know. Yeah. It is enjoyable. And silence. So all those people in Japan that go walking in the forests, and the studies on that are so incredible for us here in America, where things are so busy. You're so fortunate to be able to live in relative peace from all of the, I don't know, the technological influences, yeah. I think we have called them.
Most of society's influences are not here. Let's leave it at that. Like, we don't have a mall. We don't, I mean, we're getting there. It's, but the forest, you know, because it's very forest out here, and I think the people that are gravitated to this area, because this is supposed to be like a golden vortex area, if you're into all that, you know.
Yep.
This is where I'm living at is a golden vortex area. I didn't even know that when I was drawn here. I went cross country with my dog to save his life from, it was a long story, but in 3 days time, we went from Connecticut to Arizona and landed out actually in a place called Witch Well first, which had a canyon that it was just amazing. Talk about the tonal vibrations and the vortexes there. That was like crazy. But it's like, out of all the places in the world, I had no idea where I was going. I rented a U-Haul and just said, I'm going to drive as far away from Connecticut as I can. That is not California. And that's where we're going to go. And I wound up here.
Perfect.
Yeah. And and my mission started becoming clear as I was here. Now, it took me 8 years, an 8-year cycle, to get out of my, oh my God, I hate it here. Arizona is not my home. I'm, you know, all that. I'm homesick for what? I don't know what I was homesick for, more bullshit. But, you know, and now I finally have like settled into it, and I've found my, like the flow you said, I found my flow on the mountain. I get get where I fit into this gear shaft. I understand my purpose in it. And
yeah,
it's, it's pretty heady when you get there, you know, especially after your whole life of searching and being like, I'm never going to find where I belong. I'm just a misfit. I don't get my purpose here. My head is broken. I'm defective. All that play that goes into it. And then all of a sudden it's like, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Here I am.
Here I am, you know, and I'm doing this, well, effortlessly to a point. But it's like, that epiphany moment when I came back from dying and was like, there's a bigger purpose. I need to make it right, and searching for that. And then all of a sudden finding like, oh my God, this is what my make it right is all about.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I mean, it's like, whoa. And then trying to explain that to people that aren't ascending or aren't trying to ascend or are just happy in their comfort zone. I can't, you know?
Yes. I agree with you. It's very difficult to say to somebody, this is the potential and it's just so amazing and you almost have to die to get there.
Right, well, over and over.
Yeah,
I mean, there is a form of death to ascension. I mean, it doesn't have to be physical death, but there's a death to, you know, some kind of dogma that you had, or, you know,
yes,
some philosophy that you were living with, that in order to move on, you have to realize that things do change and your old philosophy might not fit the new day. And
yep,
if you want to, you know, you have to go with the flow again through there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
provided so, that you know where the flow is. So I guess my big question in just asking this to myself every day is like, what's the flow today? What's the flow? What's the flow? And because I know that resistance to it is just not possible anymore. I've tried that. It doesn't work.
No, it's futile. And that's like, most people wouldn't get that because so many people are stuck in their resistance or their, you know, their pragmatism or whatever it is. And they're just like, this is my life. This is what it is. There's no difference. And they can't even like get above the coloring line to go, oh, wait a minute, there's another side over there, you know, to like,
right.
Yeah. I feel bad for those people. Like they feel bad for me because of my bipolarity. And I'm like, oh, you have no idea what a gift this is.
Yeah. Yeah, okay? It's such a gift.
You know, I mean, it sucks at moments. Hospitalizations are bogus. And, you know, I hate my meds, which is, everybody well knows that if they listen to the podcast, I can't stand my meds. I feel like they flatline me, even though I've ascended to like the fourth level. I still feel flatlined.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, I and like people that have like, you know, TBIs and stuff like that, where they get like special gifts after they've had that injury to their brain, because it opens up a whole new network in their brain that they never had before.
There, I mean, now you're talking. Yeah.
That's amazing stuff right there. That neuroplasticity of our brains, where we can like one section not working so good, but boom, all of a sudden it's like lighting up over there. I mean, that's amazing shit.
I would love to be able to do some neuroplasticity work with music. I know they've done it with athletes and stuff, but wouldn't that be cool to,
yeah,
you know, to engage those two things? Think what you could do.
I think that you could figure out how to do that. I mean, because haven't they like done that with like water, the water bowl type thing, where they would have a certain emotion or something and see how it affected the rippling of the water
in yes,
the glasses?
Isn't yes,
that would be kind of like the same kind of premise in our brain as to, you know,
yeah,
you know,
and you know, our medical thing as well, we're going to do X and we're going to get the Y result. And I'm not about that. I just want to try it and see what might happen, what the potential is. Where could it go?
Not going into it with an agenda that, okay, this is what we want to have happen. So we're going to force all the control to skew that way and make it come in. Yeah. I mean, I like the danger of not knowing what's going to come up.
Exactly. And I want a leader that's comfortable with that. You know, I want somebody that's able to say to me, in whatever the field is, whether that's somebody leading the band, somebody leading the city, I don't care. But I want a leader that can say, hey, we don't know what the results are going to be. We're going to do this thing because we know it's good for us. And then we're going to just see what happens.
Yep.
Right. And
I mean, that would be like, see, there is a way to fix the world. We just have to figure out the tonality of it. I mean, I honestly do believe that. I mean, like the pyramids were vibrational, the quartz and all that they had in that, it was all vibrational. You know, Coral Castle in Florida, all vibrational, how the guy did that. Tesla, I mean, come
yes,
on.
Yes, yes.
You know, I mean, these were people that were so far ahead of their time and then were so ostracized because they got it.
Yeah, and because they're, you know, and this is the sad thing for me, the saddest thing, is that these days when people have ideas, and maybe this goes back to the industrial age, is they try to patent them and sell them and make everybody then, you know, buy it from X. Yep. And Tesla is a great example of how the establishment at the time was able to bury something that now would be incredibly useful to have. I mean, for heaven's sakes, it's out there. So we need to get together on all this stuff. And maybe that's happening too. The internet is getting people together, and apologies to you if you're a flat earther, but even the flat earthers are getting traction.
Thank God.
Right?
They all bought cats and were like, oh, yeah, the little flat, there'll be nothing on it, cats. Yeah.
Maybe so, I mean, and here we are with ideas that really work, and we've got evidence and proof and all of that. And I have this idea that it's going to be the most at-risk people that are today that are tomorrow's leaders.
I agree.
They're the
you.
Closest to the truth, you know, willing to go there.
Well, nothing left to lose. So that's kind of like what I felt like. It's like, I got nothing left to lose. I've already lost my life and had a second chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I lost my whole life back east. I lost my whole ideal of what myself was. And I was like, I have absolutely nothing left to lose. I am one of the most dangerous people on earth right now. Let's do this thing.
You know? Exactly.
You know, and I have no ill will towards people. So, I mean, it's like, because that could go diabolically the opposite direction too, if you wanted it to. But I mean, my end goal is to help people. Even people that, you know, might not be my go-to for like birthday cake. I want to help them too. You know?
Yeah. I have that same kind of ethos, because there's so many people who are so injured, but they've lost everything on purpose. There's a reason right. for that. And whether that's blown up veterans or homeless people or whatever, there's a reason that is more than just finding a house or dealing with your trauma or, you know, getting a prosthetic leg. It's bigger than that. And I think that, especially in the case of folks like veterans, they really get it. I mean, look at all the motivational speakers out there right now talking about getting blown up and what it means to be living now.
Yep.
And the people want to hear that stuff. I mean, we're not just, you know, rubbernecking it. We're there because whoever's talking has experience that we'll never have, hopefully, but that is inspiring to us in ways that we're not getting inspired by in our other parts of the world, whether that's, you know, watching kittens on social media or whatever.
Yeah,
it is
all the programming that we're being put through. Because it definitely is. See, I'm a little bit subversive, but you know, it's all good.
no, you're not alone. I am so thrilled over the last few months. I've talked to so many people, both as podcast guesting and just in general. But there's this groundswell of people who really get it, Dawn. They really do. And they're not the obvious leaders out there, but they will be, you know.
Yep.
They're coming.
No, I agree with you. Because it's like, all right, so I'm fairly new to the game, although I've been like working my game plan for a really long time. But, you know, when I decided to go full-fledged into it, it was like, here I am. So we've got like, you know, me, the bipolar, you know, on disability, ex-Air Force, you know, crypto linguist, tuba player. And we've got my friend Jackson, who's a professional wrestler, who's, you know, fighting for suicide advocacy on the other end of it. We've got my friend Joni, who makes a boob cream so your boobs don't sweat, who's paying it forward, paying for tuition for people who can't pay for their dual diagnosis in-state treatment.
Yeah.
And she's selling her boob product to, you know, give these people tuition to fix their lives. Now, we're all leaders in our own right. And because I talked to Joni, now you are like 5 degrees away from Joni, and you're 5 degrees away from Jackson, and I'm 5 degrees away from your people. And
yeah, yeah.
We're coming, you know, I really do feel like it's coming together. Like, we have an opportunity to really fix something that's gravely broken if we can all get on the same page or the same vibration, you know, or something like that.
You know, I don't normally talk about this, and I hate to bring up something that's sort of unrelated, but I was asked to help start a group of people, and there are exactly three of us in the group right now, called The Real Outliers. And The Real Outliers got started for all these reasons, because none of us feel like we're part of the mainstream in any way, in any way at all. And we know what we're doing has value. Everything you've just described, it's the same kind of feeling. And maybe that's where things need to go. You know, we need to make a conscious turn away and be okay with that. and just say, no, we're doing this because it's the right thing to do, not because it's going to make us a bunch of money, not because right. we were told we had to, not because we're anti-establishment, not because we're establishment. We're just doing this because it's necessary.
It's the right thing to do, right? It's what we're being led to do. And
Yeah.
I mean, that's what people are always like, have you monetized your podcast yet? And I'm like, I'm never going to monetize my podcast.
Yeah, that's not where the money comes from. What do you mean?
Exactly. But I mean, that's what they're so focused on. And they're like, what do you mean you're never going to monetize it? Don't you feel like you should get paid for what you're doing? And I'm like, I get paid so well when I get, you know, oh my God, this podcast touched my life. Thank you.
There you go. Yeah.
Payment, you know, and I am going to write a book eventually, and then I'll have a product, and then I can sell the product, but I'm not going to sell my podcast. It's in a way that's like selling my soul. I'm not doing it. I'll sell my book, you know, but I'm not going to sell my soul for money. It's just never happening. You know, my purpose is much greater than what a greenback can bring. So
I hear that because, you know, as a musician who isn't one of the 5 or 6 classical pianists who can make a living in the world, obviously you have to have another sideline. And when it comes right down to it, that's tremendously freeing because I can always know that what I give in music is altruistic. It's, you know, it's maybe I'll sell a CD, maybe somebody will pay for an EP. It doesn't matter. The music is the most important thing, and that it touches someone.
Right.
That's the beauty of it. You know, that, you know, one little thing that I did on some day in a studio ages ago managed to have a connection with someone who needed it at that moment. Exactly. I'm never gonna know about that stuff. And the very few that do actually say, hey, you know, Dawn, I listened to that recording you made and it changed me. Those few instances, you can't buy them. You know?
Yeah, and they're so humbling. Like, I did an interview with this gentleman, and like the next day he changed his whole website on the way he had everything worded. The interview that I did with him had brought up stuff that he had never actually, like, you know, gone through, but I don't know why he felt safe with me, but he felt safe enough with me to like venture into these, you know, aspects of his life and what had happened. Ultimately, it changed his whole entire demeanor on his life. I mean, and I got to tell you, I mean, I was like, oh my God, Trevor, are you? He's like, you changed me. I'm like, I didn't change you. I just gave you the tool for you to work through this.
Yeah.
But he's like thriving, and it's amazing to me. And I was like, and this is not what I'm going for. I mean, I want to affect people, but like for something that big to happen in front of me, and it's like, holy shit. Like,
yeah.
I had influence on that person, and like, and the whole podcasting now, I mean, I'm going to have a library of stuff that people are going to be able to go into. I don't know how many years down the road, but let's say 5 years down the road. And one of my suicide shows where, you know, I'm talking about how I came through it and, you know, how dark and bleak and awful and, you know, scary and all that it was, but that I made it, is going to help somebody 15 years, somebody who might not even be born yet.
And it's yes. Gonna yes.
People. I mean, that's time travel.
Yeah. You
know, right there. So,
I love the metaphor of, what is it, Voyager? Yeah, Voyager 1 with the gold record on it that's out there somewhere in the world. I mean, somewhere in the universe. Just the fact that we're brave enough to say, yeah, this was us, whenever that was, 1970s, I guess. This is us. The podcast, the archive of human sociology.
All the history right now that are coming down in podcasts is like, and nobody's thinking of it as that. They're just thinking of people just talking about, you know, whatever. I mean, there's a lot
of that too. But when you're when you're authentic, like you're the vulnerable, honest podcasts that are out there. Not that many, but oh my gosh, they're amazing. The stories that you hear, amazing. I mean, and if you're listening to this and it's no longer 2019 when we're recording it, you know, just know that we were thinking of you.
We were thinking of you and your future music. And please tell me that it doesn't have like too much Ariana Grande in it.
Oh, yes, I know. Or whoever it will be then.
You said you love the ballads. I'm like, I'm into Yellow Wolf right now. I have to drop his name, Yellow Wolf, my man.
Got it.
Hip hop country. He just came out with something called Ghetto Cowboy. I highly suggest you listen to it.
This is awesome. I will.
It's so good. It's hip hop country and it's amazing. But to me, like, there's music that is like, it's seasonal. This album is a fall album to me. It's like
beautiful.
It, you know what I mean? It fits it perfectly. And
Yeah, I get that energy, and it does shift. And I love having the music of the seasons, right, to mind us in different seasons of our lives.
You got your beach music, and then you've got your, like, you know, winter is usually a period of time when I don't listen to a whole lot of music. It's very triggering to me because I've had a lot of trauma around holidays and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I have, like, Let's Active. I don't know, that may or may not be a band you know from, like, the early 80s. But they're a fall band, you know. Certain chord sequences, or maybe that's what it is in my head. Certain chord sequences, you know, relate to certain emotions I feel at certain times and seasons. I mean, that actually makes sense.
I love this. I'm on my second page of notes now, everybody. So it's true. One of the ways that I find new music is by paying attention to people who are not necessarily musicians, but who have really strong connections to music.
Right.
Because you can find things. And the cool thing about it, so after I listen to Yellow Wolf and What's Active, I will know things about Dawn that I don't know right now.
Yeah. And when you listen to Let's Active, their producer, Mitch Easter. Now, I'm just going to put the name out there. Mitch Easter, go down the rabbit hole with Mitch and see who he affected, because amazing, dude. Amazing.
I love it.
Yeah. But Badger by Let's Active, you have to listen to it. That's my go-to song. It's that's the song with the chords that as soon as it plays, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. And this is another cool thing too, because now that you know this music, you don't even have to listen to it. You can just remember it.
Oh, I have a running soundtrack in my head.
Yeah, you'll get, like, the full effect. It's, like, so cool.
Yep. If people don't get that, because they're like, you know, I'll just be like bebopping and everything like that, and they're like, what are you listening to? And I'm like, I got my own symphony in my head that continually plays. And I've actually scored it, some of it, when I was back in high school when I was in theory, and I scored it out. And it was, like, beautiful when it got all the voices to it, because in my head it's, like, you know, six voices. I don't have, like, the whole orchestra going on in my head, but...
Man, that's like a life journey there. You could, the symphony of your life.
Yeah. My running soundtrack. I mean, that's what I talk about. And people, it's like, when I do my movie.
This is going to be it.
It's in it.
So how do you, you must get earworms like all the rest of us do, right? Stuff you really don't want to hear.
I really try to avoid, like, commercial radio, and, I try to avoid a lot of that stuff. Yeah, I'm on social media. I don't listen to, like, regular radio because it kills me.
Yeah.
It kills me. What happens to me is the universe brings people into my life that are listening to music that I've never heard of before, ever, and they introduce me to it. And that is, like, the sole purpose of what these people are brought into my life for, is to introduce me to this whole new section of music I never knew existed. And then I introduce people to it. But after they do their job, they're like, gotta move to Arkansas, you know, that I could introduce you to, you know. Hobson was one of the most recent ones. I'm really into, like, hip hop right now. I don't know what
you want.
Yeah. Hobson, Tech N9ne, a little bit more on the violent side, but still, it got some beautiful stuff going on. Jelly Roll. He's got a song called Fall in the Fall. Oh my God.
I'm writing.
I know. I can tell.
Have you, what do you think of Lizzo?
You know, I just was reading something about them, and I have not heard them, but they're definitely on my list of, they just came out with something new, I think, right? I've got to listen to it today. It's on my list of,
I'll send you an email with follow-up stuff. Because I'm sparking up ideas as you're talking to me now. I'm writing down Hobson, Jelly Roll, and I missed the other one that was right before that.
I don't remember. It'll come.
No, that's right.
Later.
I can listen to the podcast.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Hey, there we go. So, I always ask this question because the answer is different for everybody. So I have to flip it for a second. But when you get an earworm, something you don't like listening to, that's running in your brain, you can't get rid of it. What's your technique for getting rid of it?
I write my own lyrics to it. I make it hysterically funny, and then it's not as annoying as an earworm. And it loses its way out of my head, because it just becomes a joke.
That's beautiful. I love it.
That's the only way to do it. Cause, like, Britney Spears' Toxic. Yeah. That was one of those for a real long time. That was just like that hook it has on it.
Yeah.
I try to avoid all that commercial stuff. And I mean, they do that for a reason. They have the hook in it for to
sell. Oh yeah,
it's exactly, you know, it's an addictive quality to it. But wow. So I don't know how long we've gone. I put my phone aside, and I know we've been talking for a long time, so we probably should wrap it up.
Say something profound.
You came out with a book called More Than Human, and this just recently happened.
So that book was launched on the day of the solar eclipse. Remember that thing?
Yes.
And
two years ago,
I think it was August.
Yep.
And it's all about the human spirit and engaging the human spirit in what you do. And it came out of a study that was done by the Army, because they recognized that readiness involves the human spirit. So if you're going over the wire without a full tank of human spirit, you're a problem.
You're doomed.
So turns out that things like gratitude and kindness and honor and respect and all of that other great stuff that we're doing research on now in business, and finding out that it really is a good thing for your company to, you know, have integrity. Well, duh.
Who would have thought that?
You know, it's like, we need a study for this. Those best practices are all grounded in the human spirit. And the remarkable thing for me is that all those best practices, while you can say thank you, until you engage your emotion, thank you means nothing.
Sure.
So if you want to be authentic, you've got to have an emotional component. And guess what music is all about? So connecting like gratitude, the practice of gratitude, with a song that makes you feel grateful is a really amazing practice. And that's true for anything, whether it's resilience or integrity or, you know, gratitude, kindness. If you can connect the emotional component, and music will do that for you, you can become very powerful when it comes to being more than human, being authentic. And nobody's really teaching this. The authentic people out there say, be authentic. And then they say, what does that mean? Yeah, how do I do that? Well, if you never experienced...
Right, well, that gets you coming to, like, what are the parameters of authentic? Does it fit in with normal? Right? Who's telling you to do this? Which control group is... So,
that's
a rabbit hole. Yeah, so...
So that's more than human. So more than human is basically a how-to for people who want to do these things. It doesn't do the musical connection, because when I wrote the book, it hadn't really occurred to me. It wasn't until later that I thought, hey, this is beautiful. It ties together so well with what I do with emotion and music. So, you know, there's one of those just following the rabbit hole. And turns out a couple of them led to the same place.
Isn't that interesting? See, same mission, different map.
That's well said. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to have you back on again. I don't want to go over an hour, because that's when we start dropping our audience.
Yeah, so, no worries. Split it up.
I can do that too. I could actually do a two-parter on it. Is there anything that you want to end with, though, that you want to clarify or just pound into people's heads or sell?
Oh, well, I'll send you a link tree. Let me put that in, because that's an easy way of people finding me. And just put it in the show notes. Even better than a website, it gives you a guided tour. So that. But then the thing, I guess the message I want to leave with people is the challenge today is to sustain change. It's happening so fast. And I love the courage that you bring to the world, Dawn. That's so important. And it's got to be inspiring for people. So with that courage, everybody who's listening, engage that courage and be willing to change your music if you want to change your life.
Yes. Yes. At least just try a little jazz. You know, it might not fool you. A little bit of big band, you know, put a little bop in your stuff. It's not, you know, flip it up. Listen to hip hop. It doesn't have to be all gangster rap. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Give it a shot. Listen to Rachmaninoff, Opus 39.2, which is, there's a weird thing with the number, but there's a weird thing with the number 39 with me. So, I mean, the fact that it's Opus 39.2 is just like, of course it is.
Wow.
The minute you said that, I was like, oh my God, I live in lot 39. Every interview that I've done on anybody else's podcast has been number 39.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's 39 was a changing point in my life when I had my nervous breakdown on my 40th birthday, but 39 because I went into the hospital. My birthday is January 1st. I went into the hospital on January 1st, but at 39, I lost my crackers fully. It's a magic number for me. It really is. And it's all three. It's a trine. So
cool.
You know, it's the 369 trine and the 12 and the, you know, and if you go into music theory on that, then we could, which we're not going to do because we would lose people in about a half a second on that. But
it's on my, it's on my link tree. I think there's a way to get to it. I'll make sure that you get that link too, because it's such a, it's not, it doesn't even sound like Rachmaninoff.
Yeah,
it's like he was there. He wrote the music, but he was channeling something else from a different time that wasn't him.
No, time travel again. Maybe he was channeling future music that we haven't even heard yet. You know, I mean, we don't even know.
It feels that way sometimes.
We don't even know. I mean, music is just, it's such a huge, it's so huge. I mean, in the earth sings, just to let you know, I can give you that much information out of when I worked at Space Command, the earth does sing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And so do black holes, by the way. If there's research on sounds in space, you know.
They actually hum. They don't know the words yet. They're humming, but yeah, they do. And there is screaming out there, which we don't really like to talk about too much. So we'll just the screaming planets alone, they're very unhappy, you know.
Yes, yes, so, it's how true. Thank you for this. This has been great. I look forward to coming back on. Well, you said you had some esoteric questions. I don't know if we ever got to them, but well, we will.
I think we did. We got to the seven continents and the seven cords and how to fix our planet. I'm still working on that one. I'm still going to figure out how to get it to all like vibe again.
Love it. That's so awesome.
All right, Bill, this has been awesome interview. I'm so glad that I'm kind of glad we had tech issues last week, because I had a whole new week to think of new questions, which
we'll take another week. We'll hook up in like, I don't know, December something and go from there.
Maybe Valentine's Day, when people are getting all mopey and going. Ooh. Yeah, we'll talk about the whole romantic music tirade thing that I could go on for a long time.
No, that would be fun.
Okay, well, yeah, well, the plan around it is around one of the loveliest holidays of all, Valentine's Day.
Exactly, yes.
Bye. All right, well, this has been awesome. Really amazing. I'm glad that we connected like that, because I was hoping we would, and I was like, this is either going to connect as musicians or this is going to be like really bad. And we're going to pretend we're having tech issues and we're going to call it. That's honesty to its point. So, what were you going to say?
You're welcome. And how cool it is to sort of like hang out with a musician who gets it, and then gets it beyond like where the normal music people get it.
Yeah.
Right.
I live it. I am music. I mean, that's what I feel like. I'm not like actively like, you know, playing instruments and stuff right now, but my body, you know, your body's an instrument, a temple. I'm actively playing my instrument all the time. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. Well, go enjoy your dreary, gray, rainy, Revy sweet right now, so we're gonna get snow here soon day. I'm gonna put on some Yellow Wolf and reset my brain, and
awesome.
Go enjoy the rabbit holes I sent you down. I can't wait to hear what you think about some of the music I suggested to you.
Yeah, I'll do that, and then email you back with my suggestions as well. Comments on what you've given me.
Absolutely, sounds like a plan.
Have a great one.
I will. You too.
Thank you, Dawn.
Thank you.
You're later. Welcome. Bye bye.
Wow, huh? I'm jazzed by this past. This interview was awesome. Now, I didn't mention during the interview, because it wasn't really important to it, the way the flow of it was going. I actually play 27 instruments. It's a natural talent gift I have, and I think that's why I feel music so strong. It's like it is definitely in my soul. But just as an afterthought on this program, I do have the ability to play 27 instruments. So my relationship with music is very likely different than most anybody else's relationship with music, because I feel like I am music sometimes. I will be posting all Bill's information in the show notes. And I just wanted to say thank you to the anonymous donor who sent me the... the notebook computer. Wow. Thank you. You have no idea how much you've helped the show and the writing of the book and all the other stuff that's going to come along with the one holdup that I had in my life, which was the computer. So whomever you are, very grateful for the gift. Thank you. I don't know what else to say. I'm still a little blown away by this interview, and I feel like I've done like maybe 6 too many whippets right now, and like my head is just kind of like really fuzzy. So anyway, this is Dawn Shireen. This is my podcast, Dancing with Bipolar. Y'all have a good one. And hey, everybody, let's stay alive, okay? Later.